Iowa law mandates life in prison without parole for minors convicted of first-degree murder. However, both the U.S. and Iowa Supreme Courts say that's unconstitutional. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, we'll be talking with Iowa lawmakers working to revise the law that deals with mandatory life sentences without parole for minors. Then we'll talk about new bills in the legislature having to do with CAFOs, or concentrated animal feeding operations. Several Iowa lawmakers joining me this hour, along, of course, with Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. During the legislative session on Mondays, we like to delve into various issues being dealt with at our state capitol. That's exactly what we're doing also this Monday. Joyce Russell joins me from the State House Law Library in our state's capitol. Joyce, hello.
Hello, Ben.
Good to have you with me again on this Monday. We have a host of lawmakers to hear from on two different topics this hour. Later in the hour, we'll talk about new bills in the legislature having to do with CAFOs. These are the concentrated animal feeding operations, the ones that the big structures that have roofs on them. But before we do that, let's talk about sentencing laws. Iowa law mandates life in prison for without parole for minors convicted of first-degree murder. However, both the U.S. and Iowa Supreme Courts say that's not constitutional. So this half hour, we'll be talking with lawmakers who are working to revise the law and find out what's the crux of the challenges in doing that. Joyce, you've been covering this story. Give us some background, please, about what's been happening over the past year and bring us up to the where we find ourselves at the present.
Well, as you just explained, the Iowa's law mandating life in prison without parole for juveniles has been ruled unconstitutional. And for at least the last two and maybe the last three sessions, there's been an attempt to come in and change the law to give some guidance to the courts. It's been politically difficult to do that. Looks like a more concerted effort, or at least this looks like there's a chance for it to actually happen this year, a compromise bill coming out of the Senate with people unhappy on both sides of this compromise bill.
When we look back at the 2013, 2014, possibly as far back as the 2012 sessions, where do you see the bill having failed? What has it stumbled on?
Well, I think, and Senator Hoag will be joining us here, and he might be able to answer that question better than I, but I think it took some sitting down and compromising. County attorneys weigh in very heavily on this issue, and there wasn't enough time committed to it to come up with a compromise, and I'll let Senator Hoag disagree with that when he comes on if he wants to.
Okay, so really it's this idea of a mandated life in prison sentence without parole. That's the crux of it?
Yes, that's a part of Iowa law that needs to be changed to give guidance. That's thrown out. That needs to be changed to give guidance to the courts now.
Okay. Joyce, you're with several lawmakers. Senator Rob Hoag is with us, a Democrat serving District 33 from Cedar Rapids at the State House Law Library. Senator Hoag, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Ben.
Also in the State House Law Library, Representative Mary Wolf, a Democrat serving District 98 from Clinton. Representative Wolf, welcome back to the program again to you.
Thank you.
And we want to mention we'll be hearing from Representative Chip Baltimore, Republican from Boone. He couldn't join us live, so we have a couple of clips from him to share so we get his perspective on this. Let's start out with you, Senator Hoag, if we could. Even though you're a Democrat, and this is, a partisan issue, you are in favor of this legislation. Tell us what the legislation is and why you back it.
Well, the legislation is intended to fill this void that we've had in Iowa statute since the courts have ruled that our mandatory life in prison without parole for Class A felonies is unconstitutional. And what we have come up with is, in my view, the only constitutional provision that realistically can pass in a divided legislature. And what it does is it says, it lays out about 20-some factors that sentencing courts have to consider when a juvenile has been convicted in adult court of a Class A felony. It lays out about 20-some factors the court needs to consider, and then after weighing those factors, the court has three options. One is to sentence the person in life for life without possibility of parole. The second is for life with immediate eligibility for parole. And the third option is to specify a number of years that the convicted juvenile has to serve before that juvenile would then be eligible for parole. That's what the legislation does. And in my view, it passes a constitutional test, and it can pass in a divided legislature. And we need a statute, because otherwise courts do not have inherent sentencing authority. Courts are guided on sentencing by our statute, so we really do need a constitutional statute. And the reason we haven't been able to have one before now is because I wouldn't support something that I considered unconstitutional, and the House, in my view, wouldn't support something that I thought was constitutional. So we were sort of, we were stuck, and the courts have been making it up for a couple years. And I think we've gotten people to come together and compromise. And I think we've got a sentencing formula that will work.
Mm-hmm. Senator Hogue, just to clarify, when you say this is a bill that can pass a divided legislature, behind that is that, does that really mean that if it didn't have this option of life without parole, it couldn't pass?
I think that's accurate. I think that's necessary. So what Joyce is saying there is the most controversial portion of this bill, in my view, is having as an option life in prison without the possibility of parole for a juvenile. And there are some people who say, and they may be right, say they don't think that's constitutional because. And when I've read the cases, it says to me that what's the constitutional, key constitutional component is the individualized determination by a sentencing judge. So number one, it's subject to the judge's discretion. There would be judicial review of that. But I do think, and I think most Iowans will think, that there are rare cases where a juvenile who commits and is convicted of a Class A felony should be confined to prison without the possibility of parole. So I think in rare cases, a judge can make that decision. I think it could be upheld on appeal. And I not only think that's constitutional, I also think it's the correct policy.
Senator Rob Hogue there, if you've just joined us, Democrat from Cedar Rapids, in favor of this bill, which finds a remedy, finally, for sentencing of minors convicted of first-degree murder. Representative Mary Wolf, you're a Democrat serving in the House, the Iowa House, which is controlled by Republicans. You're from Clinton. You are not in favor of this legislation, I understand. Why?
No, I've got some concerns with it. But first, let me just say that Senator Hogue is one of my heroes, and I mean that sincerely. And I think that because of the work he's done over in the Senate for the past 4 years, Iowa is a safer and more just and better place to live. So nothing I say here is intended to in any way suggest that I don't have great respect for Senator Hogue. Having said that, I've spent a lot of time on this issue. I think I've been assigned to the various permutations of this bill that we've had over the last 2 to 3 years and read all the case law. And I do believe that the Iowa Supreme Court is taking, I think it's on a path to rule, given the opportunity that even the opportunity to impose a sentence of life without parole, without the possibility of parole eligibility on a juvenile is cruel and unusual punishment under the Iowa Constitution, under Article 1, Section 17 of the Iowa Constitution. I think the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, has already indicated that it's not cruel and unusual punishment under U.S. Constitution. So there's a lot of language in the most recent Iowa Supreme Court cases where they basically equate a life without parole sentence to the death penalty. They repeat over and over that, you know, there's no difference between those two. And thus, I think the argument would be that, well, if we know that the death penalty is unconstitutional, there's no question about that, then how could it be that life without parole is okay?
Mm-hmm. And along those lines, just to jump in here, Joyce, I think in your reporting, you talked to someone at the ACLU who you quoted as saying the only two countries that sentence children to life without parole are the United States and Somalia.
That's right. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Joyce.
Well, and the ACLU is saying essentially what Representative Wolf is saying, which is that the Iowa Supreme Court, at any rate, seems to be on a path to, if given, as Representative Wolf just said, given the chance, will also say any life in prison without parole for juvenile is cruel and unusual. Representative Wolf, I would like for you to comment on that, the fact that the Iowa Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court, the Iowa Supreme Court, is going further. I mean, should we conclude that the Iowa Supreme Court is more liberal? How would you characterize that?
Well, I think the Iowa Supreme Court has characterized it as they are sometimes more protective of the liberties set out in our Constitution in the way they interpret those liberties than is the U.S. Supreme Court when they interpret the U.S. constitutional liberties. And that, let me tell you, I think that is a fabulous thing. They've done it in Fourth Amendment cases. They've done it in Sixth Amendment cases. And they have consistently done it in this kind of line of cases. Just like to say one other thing. Regardless, setting aside the issue of whether or not this bill will ultimately be found to be constitutional, I guess, again, I disagree with Senator Hoag that it is good policy for us to codify kind of a finding that it is ever appropriate to lock a child up and throw away the key. And again, all of the scientific evidence says that, you know, minors are different, children's are different. And so the idea that any judge could know at, you know, a child who's 17, 16, that child is irrevocably just damaged to the extent that there's no hope for that child, that is not a policy or a position that I think I would rather not see our General Assembly adopting that. I think that would be a real shame.
Mm-hmm. Senator Hoag.
Yeah, well, first of all, juvenile offenders can commit the most heinous crimes. And I don't really want on the radio to go conjure up examples of what could be really bad or talk about actual cases. But I do think in rare cases, a juvenile can evidence such a level of depravity and hate that a judge can make the decision, you know, in this case, based on these factors, this child should be confined in prison for life without possibility of parole. Now, here's the other point I want to make. I'm a person who believes in redemption. I very strongly believe in the redemption of people. But just because you're spending your life in prison without possible parole does not mean you can't contribute to society. And we have lifers in Iowa today who are contributing to the well-being of other inmates in our prison systems, who are contributing and making the world a better place. That doesn't mean they need to be freed. You do something that at the point of judgment that evidences depravity is truly heinous. I think in those rare circumstances, a judge ought to be able to sentence a convicted juvenile to life in prison without possibility of parole.
If I can just jump in here, Senator Hoag, because I know you didn't want to go into a case in detail. Joyce has reported on a case in detail, we like to make sure we know what we're talking about. Certainly, there are many cases. We'll have a prosecutor join us in just a moment from Blackhawk County, an attorney. Joyce, in 2002, Greg, you covered this story. Greg Wells, brutally killed in a robbery gone bad after he delivered a pizza to a Marion apartment. Teresa Ellickson is the sister of the victim, Greg Wells. She offered testimony last fall to lawmakers describing the incident. David Keegan, he was then 17 years old. He was an accomplice in this. He first beat Teresa's brother with a hammer. This is a clip of her describing what happened after that.
And he went down, and his body was convulsing and trying to shut down, I assume. And they thought he was making a lot of noise, so they continued to harm him by trying to get his body to quiet. They tried to break his neck, and when his body still wouldn't stop, they went and got a kitchen knife and slashed his throat.
And then Teresa Ellickson went on to describe what it meant for the family to have her brother's killer sentenced to life in prison.
I felt relieved when the sentence came down because I felt like we were done with the judicial process of it, knowing he would be in jail forever.
Okay, Teresa Ellickson, a sister of a man who was brutally killed by David Keegan, then 17 years old. So, Rob Hogue, I just felt we need to be grounded in some facts, at least the facts of one case. This is the type of case that you're talking about where you want to make sure the judge or see this as a necessary compromise for a lot of your colleagues, that the judge has this option of life imprisonment without parole in cases like this.
Well, Ben, I can actually conjure up Class A felonies that would be much worse than what we just heard. And what I believe is constitutional, and I believe it's also right, is that in those rare circumstances, a sentencing judge has the ability to make the decision that this juvenile defendant deserves life in prison without the possibility of parole. And I would just add to that, there's an additional safeguard here, which is that sentence is going to be subject to judicial review. And so I don't expect this to happen often. And again, I really strongly believe in the redemptive power of people to change. But I do think there are some circumstances where life in prison without possibility of parole should be allowed.
Representative Wolf, you mentioned that the Iowa Supreme Court, if given the opportunity or some such words, they would take this bill and call it unconstitutional.
Whoa. I mean, obviously, I am not in any position to speak for the Iowa Supreme Court.
Okay,
it's
know.
Totally, that is my opinion. Let me just say real quick, what we're talking about here, all these sentences would be life in prison. So, you know, my suggestion would be to just remove the provision from the bill that allows the judge to sentence someone life in prison without parole. Judge would still be sentencing these offenders to life in prison, and the judge could say with a minimum of 30 years to serve or 40 years to serve, or I suppose if he felt it was appropriate, a minimum of 60 years to serve. So just want to make it clear, I'm not suggesting that any of these people should get out or that they will get out. And the Iowa Supreme Court says that. They comment that the court does not have to guarantee these offenders the opportunity to parole. There just has to be the meaningful opportunity that at some point in their life, they may have that opportunity to request it. So it's a really low hurdle. And and I don't know what the Iowa Supreme Court, I hope, you know, certainly I have great respect for the Iowa Supreme Court and their rulings in these cases. I think they are beautiful. I think they embody kind of the spirit of what I believe should be the goal of the criminal justice system, which is redemption, the possibility that even the worst of the worst, especially when you're dealing with children, may somehow, you know, be somewhat other than that they're not that person, that a 15-year-old who does a horrible, heinous act is not the same person that he's going to be when he's 40 or 50. And it acknowledges that. I would also like to say that I realize that the harm to a victim is in no way diluted by the age of the offender. So for the victim's family, the fact that the offender was 15, 16, I get that that makes absolutely no difference. So, you know, this has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with letting these people out of prison anytime soon. It just has to do with kind of this concept that children are different, that life without parole is, for all intents and purposes, a death penalty, and that under the Iowa Supreme Court, that has been found to be unconstitutional and cruel and unusual punishment.
Well, we've been talking about how if this bill passes, then life without parole might be down the line ruled unconstitutional. Senator Hogue, help me imagine a scenario. Let's say this bill passes. A young person is sentenced to life without parole. Then that person's attorney could challenge that and say that's not constitutional, and then it would maybe end up before the Iowa Supreme Court. Is that a possible scenario?
Oh, I would expect that that would be challenged. And I've read the cases. I think the court will say, in the appropriate circumstances, that is constitutional.
We wanted to get another voice in here along with Senator Rob Hoag, Representative Mary Wolf, both Democrats serving at the serving our state here. Representative Chip Baltimore, a Republican from Boone, did not have, scheduling-wise, the opportunity to be with us live. But I talked with him last Friday about this issue and asked him about the fact that the way forward would, this bill would put individual cases in the hands of the judge, if most lawmakers were okay with that approach. And here's his response.
Well, I think certainly didn't seem that way in the Judiciary Committee meeting we had last week on it, where the majority, well, really all the Republicans were on board with it, and one Democrat voted in favor of it. I believe that was correct, and the rest of the Democrats decided to vote no.
On what grounds, do you know?
Well, it was kind of a circular argument. I heard comments that this bill was too strict, in that it left the life without parole option in there. On the other hand, I heard it was too lenient, that the life with immediate possibility for parole was too light. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of one of those Goldilocks and the Three Bears moments, which is, you know, you can't get it too warm or too cold, but try to get it just right, but don't have any idea of what the facts may be that may lead to the need to sentence a juvenile for first-degree murder. So, I'm not getting a firm handle on what the opposition was. Mm-hmm. You know, from my perspective, the biggest problem I have with the bill, even though I sponsored it in one fashion and voted for it, was that it took away really the power of the legislature to determine what the appropriate sentencing may be. It really does leave it, all in the hands of the judicial branch.
The legislature does set parameters within which a judge can operate. So that's also determining it, right?
The bill, which would be enacted by the legislature, does set forth factors that a sentencing judge must consider in making that determination. And there's a long list of them, like age of the juvenile at the time the crime was committed, the nature of the crime, the victim, the victims that were there, the maturity level, intellectual ability, family life, background, educational level, all sorts of different factors that we put out in there that the sentencing judge must consider and hear testimony about before he makes that determination. So really just trying to take the whole child and the whole crime and the protection of the public into account.
Okay, Representative Chip Baltimore, recorded last Friday, Republican from Boone, talking about a bill currently in the Iowa legislature. We're talking with lawmakers about how this bill revises Iowa's law, which mandates currently life in prison without parole for minors convicted of first-degree murder. Both the U.S. and Iowa Supreme Court say that's unconstitutional. So a remedy is being sought. We have with us Senator Rob Hoag and Representative Mary Wolf. When we come back, we'll also talk with Tom Ferguson, Blackhawk County attorney, with his perspective on this. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're talking about goings-on in our legislature. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On Mondays during the legislative session, we like to dig into issues, bills that are still have a chance, are in the running in the Iowa legislature. Today we're focusing in on juvenile sentencing, Iowa law mandating life in prison without parole for minors convicted of first-degree murder has been deemed unconstitutional by both the U.S. and Iowa Supreme Court. So this half hour, we're talking about lawmakers working to revise the law. Now, the bill that I believe went on to pass the full House Judiciary Committee last week would Backers say it would bring Iowa into compliance with court rulings that Iowa's current law is unconstitutional. It gives judges, courts, other options, parole immediately, but also that life without parole option. And we have with us, along, of course, with Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent, Representative Mary Wolfe, a Democrat from Clinton, Senator Rob Hoge from Cedar Rapids. They stand on in this bill, at least. They are one. Representative Wolf opposes it. Senator Hoge is in favor of this, what he sees as a compromise. Let's go to Chris. Chris calling from Iowa City, joining our conversation. As you listen, Chris, what comes to mind for you? What's the question in your head?
Well, it's not so much a question as just a general statement. I think that this discussion seems to be forgetting a pretty key element, and that's that the justice system is a human-driven system. If you're going to have life without parole on the table for juveniles, you better be certain. And as this is an inherently human process, you can't be certain. I mean, if you're going to trust a human process to determine whether or not somebody's life can be taken away from them at a young age, that, in my mind, that shouldn't even be an option. We hear a lot in the news about wrongful conviction rates, and while I think it's difficult to determine how precise those rates are, you know, in my mind, from a civil libertarian perspective, that there's just too much uncertainty there before you can start making a determination like that and potentially take it away.
Okay, Chris, thank you for that perspective from Iowa City. I don't know if Senator Hoge, you wanted to comment on that.
Well, it is a human-driven process, and we also have judges that we hold in high regard in our state, and we also have an appellate process. So I appreciate the call and the sentiment, but on the other hand, there are some, you know, I think that it should be an option.
Mm-hmm. Also joining us this segment, Blackhawk County Attorney Tom Ferguson in our Cedar Falls studio. Hello, Tom Ferguson, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Okay, good afternoon to you. You've been listening there. Perhaps you have something to say about what the caller mentioned there. But you recently attended a subcommittee meeting. I wanted to mention that as well. So give us your perspective as a county attorney on this bill with its three options.
The Iowa County Attorney Association, as well as myself, have worked very hard on this issue. And we've also worked with the Iowa State Bar Association, which fully supports what's referred to as Senate File 448, and we look forward to its passage.
Look forward to its passage in particular, why?
Well, we've been operating for the last several years without a constitutional statute. Without getting into too much legalese, we've had to separate or sever out the unconstitutional aspect of our sentencing scheme, and so currently anyone, particular juveniles who are convicted of first-degree murder, can only receive a sentence of life with the possibility of parole. It is clear, both under the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Miller, as well as the Iowa Supreme Court case in Ragland, that life without the possibility of parole is constitutional, will be supported both by the federal and state constitutions, and our courts have also gone on to state that in those situations where it's appropriate, that sentence will be supported constitutionally. I think the courts have said that these cases will be rare or uncommon, and my experience is that they will be rare and uncommon. I've been prosecuting for over 30 years, and I've had three juvenile cases involving first-degree murder.
I'd like to jump in here. Mr. Ferguson is making clear that all of these cases, there were more than 40 cases of people in prison who were sentenced as juveniles to life without parole. As I understand it, they have one by one, and as Mr. Ferguson was explaining, the only option courts have now is just to change that to life with parole. One by one, these offenders have come before parole boards, have been resentenced to life with parole. One by one, they've come before the parole board and been denied. So Senator Hoge, just comment briefly on the inclination some people have to put in this bill a directive to parole boards.
Well, some of the advocates for the juveniles would like to see us adopt legislation addressing the border parole. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I also think that can be handled in separate legislation and doesn't have to be done this year. I have had a conversation with the chairman of the Board of Parole, who says that some of the flaws in their process previously, he, in his opinion, they have been corrected. And we'll see how the process moves forward.
Okay, let's wrap up this conversation. I wanted to play another clip from Chip Baltimore, Representative Baltimore, Republican representing Boone. I talked with him last Friday. He couldn't join us live. But as we finish up the last couple minutes talking about this specific issue, I asked Chip Baltimore what will happen this year, this session, and how important it was that something happened.
Well, I think it's important. I think it's very important. We have a number of juveniles that are having their sentences looked at again because they were sentenced to life without parole under the prior sentencing structure that the Supreme Court has deemed unconstitutional. So they're coming up for resentencing. And I think it's very important for us to give district court judges the tools and the structure for them to determine an appropriate sentence. So I think it's very important. I think at the end of the day, we've dealt with this now for, like I said, 3 or 4 years in a row, haven't been able to reach a determination. The Senate passed this bill, which I think largely accomplishes the goals that we need is in terms of giving that structure to the judges. So I'm cautiously optimistic we can get this thing passed and get it implemented into law and go from there.
Senator Hogue, you're a Democrat. Chip Baltimore, a Republican. Are you cautiously optimistic? Would you use those words as well?
Oh, yeah, I think this will pass. I think we remember when it didn't pass previously, it was because the House wanted to do something that, in my judgment, was unconstitutional, which was a mandatory minimum of 35 years. And I wouldn't go along with that. We could not find a compromise because of just the differing beliefs about what was and wasn't constitutional. Well, the 35-year mandatory minimum is now out of this bill, and we're relying on the discretion of the judges, and I think there is a really good chance that we'll get this passed.
Representative Wolf, as we end this part of our conversation, you are not in favor of this bill. What would be your alternative?
My alternative would be to just remove the provision in the bill that does give the court authority to sentence a child to life in prison with no possibility of parole. I think that would still give the court all the same options it has. It would just not have us codifying that what has been termed cruel and unusual punishment in our law. So that's why I feel that probably the bill in its current form is going to pass, and then we will see if Mr. Ferguson's like crystal ball is correct and the Iowa Supreme Court upholds it. I do not think that will happen. I think we'll have a chance to address this issue again in the not too distant future.
Tom Ferguson, the final word to you. You're looking forward to this bill becoming law?
Yes, I am, and I will provide guidance to our district courts when we go back into court and have to resentence those juveniles that have been previously convicted, and also provide guidance to our courts in sentencing future individuals who have been convicted of first-degree murder.
Okay, Tom Ferguson, Blackhawk County attorney. He's been involved over 30 years in his work with three cases of juvenile murderers. Thank you, Tom Ferguson, for coming into our Cedar Falls studio. As well, thanks to Senator Rob Hogue and Representative Mary Wolf for coming into the Statehouse Law Library to be part of this conversation. Thank you both. And Joyce Russell still with me by Iowa Public Radio, our Statehouse correspondent, as we shift around a little bit there at the Statehouse Law Library. We want to shift gears, talk about something else that's happening at the Statehouse now, CAFOs. I don't know if you're familiar with that acronym. Iowa has two types of animal feeding operations. These are regulated under the Department of Natural Resources, confinements and open feedlots. Now, CAFOs are the confinements. In the remaining time, I want to talk about new bills in the legislature having to do with these confinements. CAFOs, C-A-F-O, that stands for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations. And these are the operations you may spy from the highway or the interstate that are totally roofed. And Joyce, I want to turn to you again by starting us off to give us an overview of the controversy. What's the challenge now with CAFOs in the legislature in recent years?
Well, opponents would say that the solution to that is to have local control, but that doesn't seem to be in the offing here in the State House. And so there are a number of, I would say, not insignificant, but relatively minor bills this year that go get at CAFOs in one way or another.
Okay, so local bills having to do with, we're talking about water quality, air quality?
Well, water quality and air quality are concerns. I'm not sure that these bills directly address that. I guess one of our guests, when we get to them, can correct me.
Mm, okay, so let's get to our guests. And joining us for the remainder of the hour is Representative Jared Klein, a Republican, serving District 78. He's vice chair of the House Agriculture Committee, also a member of the Environmental Protection Committee from north of Kyoto. Representative Klein, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm no longer the vice chair of the Ag Committee. Okay. I was the last 2 years. Now I'm just an assistant leader.
Okay, very good. Thank you. We'll update that. Representative Dan Kelly joining us as well from the State House Law Library, serving a Democrat, serving District 29, a member of the House Agriculture Committee and Environmental Protection Committee. Welcome to you, Representative Kelly.
Thank you very much, Ben. It's a pleasure to be on the show today and talk about this important issue of clean water and what it means for Iowa.
Okay. Let me turn back to Representative Klein. Tell us, you've got two bills here. Tell us about the changes your bills would make to CAFO operation.
Well, there's two different bills. One of the bills deals with training requirements for commercial manure applicators, and this is a bill we've dealt with for the past couple years. It has left the House. But the bill simply does is it drops their retraining requirements from 3 hours to 2 hours and aligns them the same way all the other applicators that are certified in the state are. All the confinement applicators do a two-hour program. Commercial guys have to do a three. Everybody has the same rules, regulations to follow, so it's just a matter of lining those both up on the same training requirements and getting them the same programs. Again, everybody's got to follow the same rules, regulations, and laws so they can get the same training. Beyond that, I think it's important to note these are trainings that are done every year. So because of that, a lot of this is not new information. A lot of it's repeat for most of the folks there. So it's a way just to get this to be a little bit more efficient and to bring both programs together.
Just to make it a little simpler for those of us who aren't acquainted with farm operation, are your bills making less restrictions to CAFO operations? Is that the change, broadly speaking?
I would not classify it that way. I think what we're doing is tweaking the system and tweaking the laws to make it reflect more reality than some of what's out there today, and also recognizing how things have developed from what they were when they were originally put into law. And that would specifically be when we're talking about previous years. What we did was we moved those training programs into an online, we're still in the process, getting them online, and this would be ideas getting the commercial guys into the same aspect. And the idea behind getting it online was you get it available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you'll have more people wanting to do it, more people getting trained in this area, so you actually have more people doing a better job than they were before just because they have easier access.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kelly, you have a couple of bills here that concern CAFOs. What are yours about?
Yes, Ben, as we know, every Iowan has a vested interest in clean water. It's part of the infrastructure that simply cannot be replaced. We've had much discussion at the State House this session about infrastructure, generally talking about roads and bridges. Well, I think we need to take a serious hard look at that infrastructure that cannot be replaced, and our clean water is certainly part of it. Also, it was previously discussed whether or not these bills affect the air. They certainly do when we're talking about odor control and pollution and making the air comfortable to breathe and live in rural communities in Iowa. We have many family farmers who put good practice in practice every day, day to day, season to season, generation to generation. But we do have bad actors. There are bad actors not only in farming, but there are bad actors in every enterprise. And I think that what we need to do is focus on encouraging those good practices, putting new ones in place, also accountability and transparency. So I have a couple bills that address that.
Very briefly, Representative Kelly, just tell us what those bills would do.
Absolutely. HF 483. 3 deals with pollution control tax exemption. Currently, CAFOs do enjoy a tax exemption for being a pollution control area. Simply, these are storage areas for manure. And so I believe that that tax exemption is misplaced and should no longer be in place. Also, I do have a bill, HF 489, a companion bill, introduced by Senator Bolcom in the Senate, and it deals with several aspects of manure application. Basically, what we want to do with this bill is to strengthen manure application laws and ban spreading manure when it isn't safe. And also, it's time that we take all the technology available into consideration as to determining when manure can be applied.
And very briefly, Representative Kelly, what does the current law do as far as banning application of manure when it's not safe?
Well, we do have current laws that address that, and some of them are effective, but I think we need to tighten those restrictions. We have had a statewide conversation about clean water, and it's time that we put these ideas forward in terms of specifically, for instance, the bill would ban the spreading manure on frozen snow-covered ground, on water-saturated ground, when it's forecasted to rain on land with a 20% slope or more. So it just gets more specific and does tighten regulations.
Did you have a comment, Representative Klein?
Yeah, I just want to comment that it's already current law that you can't apply manure on frozen or snow-covered ground. So that's not a change. And everybody was kind of understanding on board with that. But this one does have some definite sticking points to it, especially when you're talking about limiting people's ability to do farm applications based on a weather forecast. We've all joked about how accurate some of the forecasters are, and I think this kind of leads to that.
Briefly, Representative Kelly.
It is easy to say that the weatherman is often wrong, but simple fact is that is the weatherman is a professional, and the highest levels of technology available predict the weather, and it's time that we make sure that farmers take the weather forecast into consideration when determining whether or not they can spread manure.
Representative Klein?
Well, I absolutely think that farmers take that weather forecast into consideration, not just for application of manure, but all practices. I mean, it's just they're always checking the weather. I think you can Everybody knows the farmers were great at complaining about things, especially the weather. If the markets aren't bad enough, we'll complain about the weather just because we're always watching it and we're always mindful of that, because in the end, the manure product that comes out of the building is a fertilizer. It's a natural fertilizer that has a significant financial dollar value to it, and there's nobody wanting to waste that any more than wanting to throw dollars out the window.
I don't think we're going to settle the issue of manure application
of course
here.
Not.
However, and Representative Klein, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to hear you just summarize what your other bill would do. It has to do with biosecurity.
It's got multiple moving pieces to it. Some of it's mostly in response to just tweaking the animal feeding agreement for inspecting all medium to large size operations, making some tweaks in there to make it better, and then a couple other ones. One piece deals with counties and their storage of documents. Currently, counties are required to store manure management, nutrient management plans in the county. Those documents are also duplicated and stored at a regional office and at the field and in Des Moines. So one portion of the bill would just go to allowing the counties, by a vote of the Board of Supervisors who are elected officials, to say they would opt out of storing those paper documents going forward. So that would be one piece of the bill. It's no requirements in my mind. It's just saying, hey, here we hear about all these unfunded mandates that are passed down. Here is one. Here's an option, no requirement, just an option. Another part deals with identification on commercial manure applicator equipment. Currently, name, address, and identification number are listed. They're on stickers that tend to come off during the fall when application's happening. So what we're doing is just go to their one simple number, which you can look up and find out who it is, get it more of a semi-permanent placement. The other two bigger parts, one deals with when the DNR is reviewing your plans and doing these inspections, what would be termed more of a paperwork error is dealt with the same way as somebody who is not following their plan, which would be non-compliance. So today you're non-compliant for forgetting to put your zip code or put the exact data down on the front page, even though all the data is in there. So just asking the DNR to come up with a different way of categorizing somebody that's non-compliant. Are you non-compliant because of a paperwork error, or are you generally non-compliant because you're not following your plan, you're not amending it, you're not doing something true to that plan? So that would be the other part. And the last part is biosecurity. Where we're at was we got an amendment coming down, worked with the Democrats to come up with an amendment. It'll basically have the DNR officers will have a simple checklist they'll go through with the producer, just making sure, hey, do I need to wear plastic boots? Will you provide them? Do I need to wear dust mask and respiratory protection? Will you provide it? Some just very basic biosecurity things to make sure the herds are protected out there.
Anything you have to say about any of that, Representative Kelly?
Yes, I do oppose this bill because I believe it provides some outs for bad actors. Representative Klein discussed the specifics of the bill. There are many opportunities there for a bad actor to get out of an inspection, to refuse an inspector. That's why I oppose this bill. Also, it goes right to the heart of open government. The manure management records are currently in county offices. The only argument I've heard for getting rid of those records is that they're just simply taking up space in the courthouses. Well, I've offered an amendment that would allow recorders to get rid of those records if they digitize them and make them available online. We need to put good practice in place, okay, provide accountability for bad actors, and transparency of government.
Representative Dan Kelly, thank you very much. Democrat Representative Jared Klein, a Republican, thank you for discussing these issues about CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. Also, thanks to Joyce Russell. We've come to the end of the hour very quickly. I have to say thanks to Tony Daner in Cedar Falls. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Clary Roth, and Lindsay Moon. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.